Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, I love you so much, almost as much as I love Matt Kerwick. Man, this guy's a great coach, a really good friend. I've emulated a lot of my practices after stuff I've learned from Matt back when he was down in the South here at JU. Current head coach at Cornell, numerous Coach of the Year awards, was an assistant coach for Team USA. Just great accolades and somebody I respect. Man, Coach kills it on this podcast. You're going to love this version of the 4v4 drill they call Work Your Tail Off. Another great drill in there he calls the Cheetah Drill. Another great drill where he goes 3v3 out of a motion into a pass back, developing into a 1v1. Just great stuff from a great coach. Let me say this. I'm humbled by your support of my site. What you guys do for me is mind-boggling. Keep trying to give you good content. Without further ado, a really close friend of mine and a really great coach, head coach Matt Kerwick, Cornell. Go Big Red.
Hey. Matty, this is my radio voice. You like this? Hey. This is Lex Coach Mike, LexCoachMike.com. Today is another special day, recording live here from the world headquarters of LexCoachMike.com in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, man, today's awesome. This is not only a great coach, but somebody I respect, I love, I follow what he does, I have emulated his practices. Matt Kerwick, now Cornell. Oh, I need to say, do I need to be appropriate? I need to say the Richard M. Moran, head coach at Cornell. Is that part of the deal? I
mean, you got I'm proud to be sitting in this chair that Richie built. So, yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Mike.
Well, and I'm that old. I remember those games, man.
You know, and
I remember those dynasty years and all that, you know. Do you know Joe Zombesi?
I don't.
Okay, I shouldn't say that. He played on a lot of those teams. He's down here in Atlanta and a really good friend of mine.
What's the last name?
Zombesi.
Oh, sure. I know the name. I don't know if I've run across him, though. But, you know, it's a funny story, Mike. I actually sat here, 1986 in this office with Coach Moran, and, you know, I was really interested in, you know, trying to take a look, and then he looked at my SAT scores and said, big boy, he's got to go up quite a bit, you know. So that ended that discussion quickly, but very, very, very fortunate to be here.
Well, there's for the listener's sake, you need to go to the website, man. They've done some really unique things for NCAA lacrosse on the bio page for Coach. He actually does a little film history of his relationships and his dad and his memories of growing up in Skinny Atlas, and we're big fans of Skinny Atlas here. In my corporate job, you know, when I wrote the Gen X book, Ken Blanchard wrote the foreword.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a house on Skinny Atlas.
He does, yeah. He does have one up there. I've seen that.
And I did, we shouldn't do this on the air, but I did, I wrote a workshop for him on his team motif book, High Five, which was a fictional story around hockey, which is a great book, incidentally.
Right.
And he asked me to, or he contracted me to do the PowerPoint and do the workshops for it, you know, because all his stuff was pretty academic in terms of reverse bell curves and graphs and 12-page manuals and all that academic stuff, which, of course, I was never any good at. But when I would mail him revisions, I'll never forget, you know, I always mailed them to Ken Blanchard, care of the mailboat at Lake Skinny Atlas.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
That's how I sent him stuff back then, yeah.
It's still running as far as I know.
Yeah, Chris Kelly, Summers up there. I got a bunch of friends up there. Anyway, hey, man, let's get into it. I was, number one, I'm a jackass. Everybody knows that. But we haven't had you on since 2014. And reviewing some of that stuff, it kind of blew me away because you know, I've always, especially with younger teams, you know, jettisoned line drills and even a lot of traditional, like, star stick work drills and stuff like that from upstate, in favor of letting the young kids do shooting drills, one pass, two pass shooting drills, right hand, left hand, do it with a split, do it with a roll, do it with a pass back, emulate parts of your offense in the, but run the drills, the shooting drills really quick and get the kids 70 or 80 touches. And I thought we were in the same camp, you know. And then last time we talked, you actually grew up into being a big-time NCAA Division I coach, even though you were at JU, too. And, you know, you were kind of doing that stuff in the pre-practice as opposed to the stick work drills after the guy stretched. And then the other thing that was unique that struck me I wanted to ask you about was a lot of guys come right out of that and do a you know, some even guys even do 2v1, you know, or 3v2 or a low build-up drill to get the pace of practice energized and all that. You're one of the very few, maybe the only, although I'm 60, so my memory sucks, that I've talked to that was running a 5v4 off a ground ball, almost like a scramble out of the crease area. And you were doing that, if not every day, like 2 or 3 days a week. Is that still how you're opening up your practice, Coach?
Well, we still do that a lot. And, you know, like we look at, you know, each team's unique, right, in some ways. So you want to kind of find what's the best kickoff for you each day. And we still do that quite a bit here. You know, one that I've been doing a lot lately, you know, because we had a slow start to the season without question and, you know, very young group offensively. And we just didn't feel like the compete level was where it needed to be. And we had a very tough opening schedule. We opened up with Penn State after a couple weeks of practice, and obviously they're having a great year, you know, number one right now. And you know, that's just the way it's worked out for them. They're a very good team, obviously, and Tambo's doing a great job with them. But, you know, we just felt like early, and then we played Albany, and, you know, then we played Virginia. So we're seeing some great offensive teams. And we just didn't feel like our offense, our top offensive group and our top defensive group were giving each other a good enough look, you know, so the games were quicker paced than practice, and can't be that way. You know, you want your practice to be harder than games. So we've actually been doing what I call, work your tail off drill. I won't give you all the verbiage there. It's a little bit different than that, but,
we're good, man. Work the tail off. You're already miles ahead of most coaches in naming drills. You understand?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It might be a little bit different, you know, than that, but that's kind of what the drill is in terms of what we do. And it's a 4-on-4 drill. So we've been doing, instead of the 5-on-4s a lot, we've been doing the 4-on-4. We're getting ready to go out there pretty soon, and we're gonna kick it off with that again. And it's 4-on-4, and there's a coach standing on the side with a bucket of balls. And then there's another coach standing on the other side, directly opposite from me, with a bucket of balls. And I'll blow a double whistle on my side. He'll have a single whistle on his side. And as soon as I blow the double whistle, all the offensive guys should be either cutting or breaking out, finding space. I'll throw a ball in. And the rule is, as soon as you get the ball, you have to go to the goal with reckless abandon. And you've got to go hard. And it's a very physical drill. It can get a little bit hairy. Honestly, but, and whatever happens, the ball goes in the cage, the ball goes on the ground, you know, shot goes wide, whatever it is, that single whistle comes from the far sideline. My assistant coach now has the ball. Everyone's got to turn, react, and then he's throwing the ball in. And it can be a feed to the crease. It can be a guy popping up top. It can be a guy popping to X. And then as soon as you get the ball, you've got to go. And it's a very intense, physical drill. A lot of bodies hitting the ground. It can get a little bit heated, and that's kind of what I've wanted to do with our slow start, and I think it's helped us. We've played pretty well the last 4 or 5 games, and now we got to find out ways to pull these fourth quarters out, because we're putting ourselves in position to win these games. Now we have to win them, but I think that's been a drill that we've really liked, and it's a very intense 4-on-4 drill. And then you'd probably give each group, you know, 5 or 6, maybe 7 balls total. And then you get 4 new guys in there on O&D, and boom, you're going again. And it kind of sets the tone for the compete level that we need to have.
Oh, man. Coach, in order to make a legitimate pass into one of the players that's moving on the 4v4 off the double whistle, are you actually right by the restraining box there? I mean, you got to be kind of close to be able to throw them a good pass, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably about, you know, 10-12 yards out of the drill. That's it. So we're right there, and all, let's say I'm on the offensive side, all the offensive guys are standing behind me, and all the defensive guys are standing by, you know, my other coach across the way, and there'll be some chatter going on. So it's a great setting the tone type of drill, and I hadn't done it in a long time, and I learned it way back when I was coaching at Georgetown in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was a drill that really, I think, carried a really good team in 99. We went to the Final Four. We had a great team. And I just remember the intensity level in that drill in particular. It kind of stood out, and I kind of went back to my old binders and looked through some stuff, and I said, you know what, we got to get this one going again.
No, you say, I went to Last Coach Mike and I got a plethora of new drills is what you want to say. But I'm going to let it go because I love you so much.
That's right.
All right, so tell me, man, we still got pre-practice, and then you stretch, and then you're coming right into that, or are you doing stick work and then going into that?
It depends what we've done pre-practice. You know, if we're shooting the ball and defense is doing some footwork and some ball handling drills, then we'll go right to that. If we feel like we want to get some touches on the ball, we'll get some triangle stick work or diamonds or, you know, pairs or weave it or whatever, just real quick, 5 minutes of touching the ball, and then we jump into this to kind of set the intensity level for what we have to have for that day.
How have the kids reacted to it, or the young men in your case?
Well, I got to tell you, this place, Cornell, and the young men that we have here, it is the best job in the world. You know, these guys, I look forward to working with them every day. They care so much about the tradition here. They care about each other. They work really hard. They're academically driven, and they're just driven to be great at everything they do, you know. So it makes it really easy. So whatever we throw at these guys, they embrace it and they go after it. And that, as a coach, you know, Mike, you can't ask for anything more than that. It's incredible.
Hey, man, not all seasons are like that, as I've come to find out.
That's for sure.
I'm not going to go into any details on the air, but next time you and I our paths cross, I'll tell you some stories.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, man. So if we're going to run each group of eight, for lack of a better description, for six balls or seven balls, what is that, Coach? Well, the guys going to the cage, each rep goes pretty quick, right? I mean,
it can be.
They're really not holding the ball for a minute.
No, it's not about
it's
getting
quick.
The ball. It's kind of, there's an urgency to it that we tell them. We said, this might not be the way we run offense or even our defensive side. You know, this is about being really aggressive on both sides. And you're looking to double if you see the back of a helmet. Defensively, looking to put your shoulder on somebody. Offensively, it's try to run by that first guy. And then as they get better at it, you know, the ball will move. You know, and there'll be assisted goals, and there'll be 3-4 passes, and then another guy will dodge really quick. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be the one guy to catch the ball. He has to get a shot. But it is, when you get the ball, we want you going to the goal, putting pressure on, running by that first guy, and then playing lacrosse from there. So it's, you know, some balls are a little longer than others. Sometimes it's the ball's in and out of that guy's stick quick, and the whistle's blowing, and another ball's coming right in. So it depends on.
So, Matt, if he draws and dumps, the guy that received the pass is allowed to shoot right away?
Yes.
I mean, you don't have any hidden rules in here like, you know, being an upstate guy, you know, I have to say. You know, the upstate guys have always, you know, lived by the, you know, the mantra of pass, pass, dodge, kind of, in a general sense, you know?
Sure. Sure. No,
but you don't have those rules in this drill. They can go.
Right. This is actually the opposite of that. Yeah, it's a little bit different. And more times than not, it's, you know, you're required to go to the goal. You know, don't look to pass first. Look to be a scorer first. And then if the defense doubles, slides, whatever it is, or you see a guy open on the back pipe, then give it to him. And again, as the guys get better at it, it becomes a little more controlled. But we want it to be really fast-paced drill and a lot of reps, you know, a lot of balls getting thrown in there. There are times that if the defense...
How long have we known each other? 10 years, and you've been hiding that one from me, man? I love that one.
I
that
forgot
right.
about it a little bit.
I thought we had an open relationship, man.
I wanted to bring it to you today. That's right. This is what this is all about. So
you're going
to
make me throw the penguins in your face now, aren't you?
Don't do that.
I know. That's the fighting words with you, man. But,
Murray
finally improved his glove hand, and the Penguins are playing good, man.
Yeah. Well, my youngest son is a hockey guy, and he loves the Penguins, so it makes it tough on me at home. So he's a front runner, I guess.
Hey, they're poised and ready, man. We're getting quietly healthy, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Pretty good.
So, Coach, after we've really set the tone with the physical 4v4, which I love, incidentally, and have not heard before, which is really saying something after 250 articles on drills. Where do we go from there, Coach?
Well, you know, typically
are you back into station work there, or
no? You know, we'll depending on the day. You know, we have one field here that we share with the women, so some days we can get out there earlier and shoot, and guys can do that. If we can't, then we might go to some shooting skill work there. But it depends on the day. Like today, I think we want to, you know, being a Thursday, we play Saturday. We want to kind of set the tone with our transition game, so we'll probably get a full field transition drill going, get them running the full field. And then, you know, whatever that drill might be, it might be full field fast breaks into full field 54s or 65s. We've added a drill that we really like going 54s to 55s, full field 55. We felt has been really good for us this year, for both team offense and defense. And we made up a drill called Cheetah where we're running full field 54.
You're killing it on names, man. You're like the best coach in the country on names.
This one you're going to like. And then we add a guy, so it's full field 55. Work on a lot of the pass down, pick down, and some of the things we want to see with pick play. And then I'll bring the long stick middies up by me on the midfield line. I'll send him in whenever I want. So I can send him in offensively, so it's a 6-on-5. Or I can send him in going the other way defensively, and now he's the cheetah, and we're trying to hunt double teams. So we're trying to get guys pinned in corners and maybe up near the midline or down in around the goal line extended in the corners, working on our doubles and working on trying to beat double teams. And it's been a really good drill for us. I think it's tough on the offense, but it teaches you how to run away from pressure. It teaches how to move two passes away from the ball, and it's been a pretty fun drill for us.
So it's like a 54 to a 55 with an add one feature, kind of.
Yeah. So we'll run 54s for a bit, and then we'll say, okay, now we're going 55. You know, both middies are getting back in, so you go offense to defense to out. So it'd be 5-on-5s for a bit. That's where we work on pick play. And then I'll say, okay, now we're running cheetah, and I'll grab the long stick middies. I'll have 3-4, maybe even a couple short stick middies, whatever it is. And I'll be up near the substitution area, and I'll just send them whenever I want. So it can be a double as soon as you're getting over the midline. It can be tracking a double down in the defensive end, or I can send him on the offensive side, and it's a 6-on-5. So it's about recognizing the situation and communicating that to each other.
So those guys that you've got in your hip pocket by the substitution box, Coach, you've got them broken into two colors of pennies there, and you're saying
exactly.
Go white or
exactly.
Go red,
yeah,
or something like that?
I'll have like two or three in red and two and three in
okay.
White, and then I'll send them accordingly the way I want them to go.
Man, you like studied up for this. That's another great one.
I just wrote up the practice plan for today, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I love that one. And for the guys that are listening, you know, hey, Matt, how many guys you got on your roster this year?
We're a little heavier this year. You know, we only graduated 6 guys last year, and we brought in a normal class of, you know, 12, 13 guys. So we're at, like, 46 right now, which is a little heavy. I'd like to be around 42.
I was going
to
say, you've had some years where it was in the 30s.
Yeah, we did. A couple years ago, we had a really good team, and it was a light team. It's just the way it worked out. We graduated like 16 seniors that one year in 2013, and we went to the Final Four, and then we had a small freshman class, so it was a small roster, which I kind of enjoy, but it's getting tougher and tougher these days to do that. We'll get it back down around the low 40s once we start graduating the regular amount that we should be, which is, you know, 9, 10, 11 guys a year.
You know, I had the funniest conversation with Rick Soule when he went to Navy.
Right.
You know, because like at Stony Brook, he had like these 26, 28, 31-man rosters, right?
Right.
And he went to Navy, and they had all those guys on two fields. He said he had more coaches than he had players, you know, when he was at
right.
Stony Brook.
Right.
And he's such a genuine guy. And most people don't know. He's a great box player, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, no, Ricky and I were roommates on the road in Baltimore.
I knew that you guys were ahead of history. And but he's so genuine and honest, you know.
Yeah.
He comes off as imposing, I think, when you see him on TV or you hear him speak, because he's very passionate. But, I mean, really, he's just a genuine guy, you know?
Yeah, he's one of the best in the game. He's one of my best friends in the game, and absolutely love him. I got to
get you to listen to that podcast, because, Matty, it's hysterical. He's going, man, I show up for practice. I'm going, what am I going to do with all these guys? You know?
Right, right. Yeah, it's different. different at the academies, that's for sure. You have to be prepared for that.
All right, man. So depending on the day, we're doing some transition work or full field stuff. Where are we going now?
Well, we'll typically then, you know, get some 6-on-6 in, whatever the drill might be. You know, we try to usually scramble that into a 6-on-6 some way or another. You know, we've got a couple different drills for that, but we always like to either start it off the ground or start it with a double team or start it from a broken play into 6-on-6. And, you know, we'll spend quite a bit of time there. And then from there, we do a lot up and down. When you have 40-plus guys, you like to get them playing, you know, so we do a lot of situations on the clock and different scenarios,
yeah.
Out of timeouts, you know, 2 minutes to go, we're down by a goal, we got to clear it, you know, whatever those situations are, we have a long list of them, and that's typically how we scrimmage on, like, Wednesdays and Thursdays. And it's,
well, you know, Matt, one of the things that sticks in my head when people ask me about you and practice plans, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not trying to generalize or put you in a box here, man, but my impression has always been that you didn't spend a ton of time on dedicated clearing. You didn't spend a ton of time on 6v6, but you did a very specific and well-planned job of integrating those into full field. Is that fair?
That's definitely fair. I've always believed in that. You know, I think...
I mean, historically, you know, I mean, yeah. It wasn't, you know, on the practice plan, if you were looking at it drawn up or you were going through it with the coaches, you know, early in the morning or whatever... You know, okay, we're going to do, skeleton work and scouting work is skeleton work and scouting work, that notwithstanding. You like that? Notwithstanding. That's like a Cornell word I used in this podcast.
There you go. Big time.
Yeah, your turn now, man. Let's see what your thesaurus says. And I can remember, and I talk about that, you know, when I talk to groups and they want to ask me about different ways to skin a cat. And you know, at the high school level, we still get guys that are doing 6v6 for 35 minutes until 10 guys die of boredom, you know, that are throwing dirt on each other on the sidelines.
Right.
You know, and I've mentioned that before, you know, or I mean, practicing rides and clears for a high school coach is brutal. You know, I always say on the air, it's always raining. I don't know why. Whenever you work on clears, it's always raining. And, you know, you're screaming and kids aren't paying attention and the twos and threes at the high school level can't throw and catch. And,
right.
It's just brutal, you know, but incorporating that into the 10v10s, like I said, that's always something that I've affiliated with you. I don't know why. Maybe just, you know, the times we've talked or me trying to study at your feet or all that. But
yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, we, you know, for example, this week, you know, we didn't have a great day on Extra Man last week, and we kind of looked at it and said, okay, we're doing man up, man down at the end of practice like a lot of teams do, and, you know, it's just different, you know. So we actually put those in our scrimmages, so it was part of the scrimmage, and it's a live man up, man down. It's just a different feel, you know, and I think you can get caught doing that in 6-on-6 too. When you're doing 6-on-6 at one end and you keep doing it and you keep giving the ball back to the offense, even though they've thrown it out of bounds or turned it over, I think when you put it in a scrimmage format, even though you're keeping the ball at one end quite a bit, maybe your ones are on their one, on your ones at one end, 6-on-6, you still want to, you know, be able to, okay, you turn it over, now the ball is going the other way, the middies have to get back in on defense. You know, I think it's just more realistic in so many ways. So I've always believed in that, and if you have the luxury of having the amount of good players that we have, then we should, you know, reward those guys at the other end by giving them some transition opportunities with, you know, our D-middies running down to them. And I think it just it makes for a better, more realistic approach to practice. So I've always believed in that.
You know, it's funny, man. Over the last 2 years, probably, Coach, on the podcast, and again, you know, when I talk about these trends, you know, I'm talking about, you know, not 100% of the coaches, you know, but more than a few. Somewhere in between there, I guess. And, yeah, we're seeing a lot of, even towards the tail end of stick work, you know, a 1 minute penalty, a 30 minute penalty, then back into stick work.
Right.
You know, saying you're running, you know, the drill, everybody kind of runs, you know, red, white, red on one sideline, red, white, red on the other, 6v5 to 6v6, you know, going back the other way and all that stuff.
Right.
You know, right in the middle of that, even a transition drill, if you will, popping not long, you know, literally a 3-minute, 4-minute man up, man down session.
Right.
Into those drills and trying to do that a minimum of 3, usually 4 times. And obviously this is once you have it in and all that kind of stuff, you know.
I like that. I might try that today. I don't know if I've ever really done that. I mean, certainly we've thrown it into scrimmages and you're throwing a man up here or there, you know, and a 1-minute man up in the scrimmage format. I think it's really beneficial, but I'd like to give that a whirl. I like that. I got something from you. See, Mike? I'm taking stuff from you.
Well, I'll tell you what we found, and for the guys that are listening that might want to do this, the first couple of days you run it, you know, I mean, your players are young men and mature and great athletes and great players, and I mean, but at the high school or the rec level or the travel team level or whatever it turns out to be, you know, your team's not going to get in that mindset the first or second time you do that in a practice and be effective.
Right.
Or they don't want to let go. You know, you're only going to run it a minute and a half, and they're going, no, we need to do this. Or the defensive coach says, let me go through this slide again, or what we're going to do when they change into that formation. You know, and you're going, no, man, this isn't the time for that. I mean, that's the chalkboard, or that's when we're in a more static part of the practice earlier in the year, in the fall, or do it individually off on the sidelines and put somebody else in, you know.
Right.
So you got to be a little bit, I mean, to be effective, it's got to be disciplined in terms of don't turn it into a 10 or 15 minute session, because then all you're doing is taking the drill at the end of practice and inserting it somewhere else.
Right.
But with the ebbs and flows, you know, that happen in lacrosse games, or you're playing pretty well and all of a sudden there's a shaky call, you know, where you're down a minute, and mentally, you know, you're not prepared to be man down because you're flying up and down the field and you're doing things well. The only thing I would caution the listeners is understand this, that it's a learning process for the kids, you know, and first or second day you run it, you know, it's going to look a little rough, and because mentally they're not in a man up mode mentally. But
right.
You start to do it, you know, twice a week or 3 times a week. We found that our kids love it. You
well,
know,
I think that,
and
sometimes
we'll let the
you're preparing them to, you know, mentally be prepared for it, right? I mean, you're getting them mentally prepared to
react on
throw,
the field.
Yeah, whatever you throw
yeah.
at them, they've got to be efficient and focused, and I think that's a great thing.
And then we keep score for the week.
Oh, that's great.
We reset. The scoreboard for the week, and we actually we're blessed. I'm at a very wealthy Christian school where I'm coaching now, although the players don't always act like Christians. oh my gosh, I could tell you. Yeah, guys dropping F-bombs, you know, the refs running by me, because I know all the refs, and I was a ref for 10 years, and I've been around forever. You know, the refs running by me going, this is a Christian school, Mike? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, when I had to do my background check. Anyway. We'll let the players, or we'll have actually have the we have a sister of one of the players that's kind of like a manager. She's like an eighth or ninth grader, but she can run the scoreboard great for drills off the practice plan, you know, time frames.
Right.
And we'll actually give her the sheet, and she keeps track of that. And then, so when they go in, let's say we're 15 or 20 minutes into practice, and we're going man up, man down for a minute, and then we're going to do a 30-second. Or we'll do a two-man, or do a 1 minute, and then we'll do a two-man down for a minute. She puts a score on the scoreboard for the week so far.
That's great. I think that's really really valuable for the guys. Anything, and that's one of the things with our compete level this year we felt was needed to improve, and so we've been keeping score a lot more in everything that we're doing. You know, and
I don't think the high school coaches as a whole, Matt, I'd be curious to get your opinion because, man, you're just so well I mean, you're a lot of places, and you see a lot of stuff, and obviously you're in a hotbed of lacrosse. I don't think the high school coaches have quite grasped the way the college coaches have on the importance of competition in every segment.
I think, you know? it's so crucial. I mean, it's what you're always trying to be as a team, right? It's about competing and being tough and, you know, competing in everything that you're doing, the ground ball drills, the – you know, the little things that lead to, you know, you being great in full field, right? All those pieces that you put there as a coach, it's all about being as realistic as you can so it carries over to playing 10-on-10 lacrosse, right? And so the more you can compete, I think, is crucial.
Well, and Matt knows, but the listeners don't know, you know, in as much, you know, but in real life, you know, I research millennials and Gen X and do corporate speaking. That's kind of what I do to pay the bills. But the data on the hours that an 18-year-old has spent playing video games is mind-boggling.
Right.
Like tens of thousands of hours, okay? And when they're playing the video games, you know, within 30 seconds, they know whether they got blowed up or they blowed somebody up.
Right.
Know? And they're very accustomed to the instant feedback and the score.
Right.
And it becomes, you know, I mean, if they spend their rec time and one of their key hobbies is the video games, or I mean, and I'm not a proponent or a non-proponent of video games, but I'm saying if you take the millennial mindset, you know, they're very, very accustomed to instantly knowing where they stand.
Right.
And
right.
Integrating that into your practices, I think, is more of a challenge for coaches than it is for players. And then I'm getting way off track here, but the other question I get a lot from coaches is, you know, what is the risk and reward?
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I think at the college level, you kind of got a little bit of advantage in that, and having been, you know, I don't think I was ever a student athlete, but I was definitely a college lacrosse player at numerous universities, incidentally.
Right.
You know, when you can say who can eat first on the road and those kind of things, you know, get their stuff off the bus, whatever it is, you have a lot more positive reinforcement. I think one of the stumbling blocks with high school coaches and rec coaches is, you know, losers picking up the ball or losers running gets old in a hurry.
Right.
You got anything else you've done for positive or negative reinforcement of those competition elements, Matt, or any ideas or just thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, it has changed quite a bit, you know, in terms of getting on the line as a disciplinary thing, you know, as opposed to that's a conditioning piece, right? So, you know, playing for push-ups, doing those things, I think it does have some impact, but it's more, you know, you're getting down to do 10 push-ups. That's not really that impactful physically. You're not that challenging for these guys, but I think, you know, there is a pride piece to it. You don't want to be the guys doing the push-ups, you know, so those things we still do quite a bit. You know, I think you hear a lot of teams doing the inter-squad scrimmages, and you have the hot dog versus steak game, and, you know, the team that wins gets steak dinners, and the other guys get hot dogs, and we've done that.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that one. Man.
Yeah, I know Notre Dame's always done it, and we do it. We have like a We call it the Chipotle game. You know, the team that wins gets Chipotle, as the team that loses maybe gets something else, you know. So
really? That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, and that's you know, every once in a while you throw that at them. I think the guys enjoy that. You know, but really it's more the pride piece to me. You know, it should be very prideful for you that you want to be the team winning the drill and battling through that drill and whatever it is. If it's that 4-on-4 work your tail off drill. Like, you know, we'll at the end of it, you know, the old guys might be saying, that's an O day today. You know, we got you to kick off practice here, you know, and I think that stuff's really important to build that compete level. And it doesn't have to be all that serious, but it should be meaningful.
Man, I'm sitting here racking my brain. I can't remember the coach. Somebody I talked to along the way, Matt, was experimenting with the winners running, and the losers had to line up and clap.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
They made like a channel. You know, they were doing like whatever, 16, 18 seconds, sideline to sideline.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And the winners lined up, or excuse me, the winners ran,
right.
Released one at a time, almost like a senior night or something, you know?
Interesting, yeah.
Where the losers had to stand there and clap and reward the winners who ran one at a time through the channel.
Right.
You know, the
right.
coach was down at the sideline saying, go, 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 go. Or the players would give the guy ahead of him a 5-yard start, you know.
Right.
And they're running like 70%. I mean, it's not 100% sprint, you know, but it's a run. And I tried that. That didn't work with my team very well.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, now that you say it, it's an interesting piece. I thought it was more of a punishment thing. But, you know, when you've heard of guys who don't, yeah, like show up late for a meeting or whatever, and they're the guy blowing the whistle and for the run for the entire team because they were late. And I've never really seen that as being productive, but it's an interesting point you're raising.
Well, you got to be cautious about splintering the team to some degree, too, when you do the minutiae like you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I agree.
You know, and the other thing, I can remember Petro telling me, you don't know what's going on in their lives. As a coach, you've got to know a lot more than you used to. You
sure.
know, and he talks about the candy bowl and how they get guys into coach's office and stuff like that. But, yeah, you don't know why that guy's late. So before you hammer him, make sure you know.
That's exactly right. These guys have a lot on their plate. They really do. And I know we're so singularly focused on what we do and in our profession and trying to be successful and win games. But these are the best and the brightest, and they have a lot going on. And so
it's a long story. I'll give you the short version. Petro was talking about a kid that couldn't throw and catch and had an awful, awful day. And Petro was going to ream him, as Petro can, and didn't. And, you know, then he let it go till the end of practice, and he was going to ream him. The kid was walking off. It's on a podcast. And the kid had his helmet on. You know, it was hot. And Petro said he doesn't know why, you know, but he went up to the kid before he hammered him and saw tears streaming down his face. You know,
right.
and Petro went up to him, and the kid looked and said, "Coach, I was awful today. I probably shouldn't have practiced." And Petro goes, "Like, what's up?" And he goes, "I got a call at 3 o'clock last night, man. My mom called. My dad left, and he's not coming back."
Right, right.
And you sit, you know, and Petro's going, like, 99 times out of a million, I ream this guy.
Sure.
You know, when in fact, you know, probably our generation, we didn't have to go through that like a lot of these guys, those kinds of things like this generation does, you know.
Yeah, there's certainly, like I said, there's a lot going on. As coaches, we're very important in these guys' lives, and I think sometimes maybe we don't think as on those lines enough. You know, I think these guys really respect, you know, our staff and what we can do for them, so you have to be fully aware that there are a lot of moving parts right now for these young men.
Well, you know, Petromala's point was, you know, he kind of, you know, when he played for Tierney, he was close to Tierney, but the head coach kind of had to stay one step removed philosophically because he had to make the hard cuts or the hard calls or do this or do that, you know?
Right, right.
And he said what he has learned is that it's a different world, and now he has to know what's going on in the lives of the kids. Not just his assistants.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think back in the day, you know,
comment, you know.
Yeah, you would kind of you didn't want to know certain things, you know, as a head coach, you know, and I think it has changed a lot. I think David's dead on there. I mean, that's spot
change
on.
For you, man, because you're a coach of the year. For me, there's a lot of stuff I still don't want to know.
Well, you know what? It's there are certain things that get brought to your attention. You're like, I didn't really need to know that, but you know, you have to embrace all of it because we are very fortunate doing what we're doing, right, Mike? I mean, I can't think of anything better than getting up and doing this every day.
Yeah, we close every podcast with that line. You know, you got a tremendous responsibility and opportunity influencing the lives of the young people. Take it seriously, and I don't think a lot of guys do. You know, and they get caught up in the wins and the losses and the rankings and how did practice go. And, you know, not all practices are going to be great, man. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just,
right.
And as a coach, the trick is to be playing great when you need to play great, you know, and first couple games of the year probably don't matter as much, you know, as a lot of coaches think they matter. Anyway.
That's
hey,
right.
Man, so where are we at in practice now? We scrambled. We've done our situational scrimmages. Are you still running full field, like 20 minutes of practice, Matt?
Yeah, just about.
I know. You've got a. You or at least in our experience together, you've been a. You know, we're going to go full field, and even if we're integrating the segments or focusing on situational scenarios, that we're still going to do a lot of full field.
Yeah, I think, you know, now we're getting into April here and you know, we've put all the pieces in. Now we're going to, you know, shorten our practice a little bit, and we're going to go about an hour and 30, hour and 45 tops, and, you know, probably a good 20 to 30, you know, 30 would be a heavy day of full field. And then you add, you know, 15, 20 minutes of maybe, you know, 6-on-6 or 4-on-4s to work on your team O and your team D, and throw in some transition. You know, we can't reinvent this thing. You know, it's a pretty simple formula. You just have to get your guys competing, and then we finish with the full field. And, you know, a lot of times we'll throw some scrimmages to one. I think I talked to you about that last time.
Yeah.
We'll, instead of doing a, you know, 20 minutes at the end, we'll throw scrimmages to one in there throughout the course of the practice, which the guys always enjoy. You know, you just stop a drill and say, all right, scrim to one. Guys, you know, get to their spots. We face it off, and we can be a 30-second scrimmage, can be a hopefully not a 7-minute scrimmage, but you never know.
Well, and, yeah, we're huge proponents of that on the site. I mean, the kids love it. I mean, I love it. It's fun for everybody. And, you know, the guys with the smaller rosters would always be sending me emails. You know, you can very easily do that with two attackmen and two defensemen down at one
right.
end.
Right.
You know, it's certainly easier if you get two real goalies versus setting the goal up or, you know, doing something like that. But
Right.
And it's more realistic on your face-off work, you know. I mean, I think right in the middle of or right at the end of another segment, you know, getting right into that stuff. Hey, Coach, I wanted to ask you. I was listening to the last podcast yesterday, and there's a drill that you offered on there that had slipped my mind. Again, you know, I'm 60, you know, really. And it was a 1v1 that developed out of a 3v3. And the 3v3 was set up as a kind of a generic motion, if you will.
Sure.
One guy drove, the other guy filled or mirrored or whatever you want to call it. The other guy, you know, whether you're a pop or a fade, whatever your terminology is, the other guy would pop out. So the guy would drive, he would pass back, and of course, it's, you know, got West Jenny roots written all over it, right?
Right.
Pass, dodge. But the guy would drive down the alley. He would pass back to the middie that was filling his – I'm saying middie. Obviously, it's all the offensive players in this case probably. But he would drive and pass back and hit the guy that was filling his space. He would pass it back one more time, and then that guy had to go 1v1 to the cage.
Sure.
I don't know why I haven't been running that drill, man. I listened to it yesterday, and I was – you know, it's kind of funny, man. One thing we have in common is we have awesome wives, right? And – you know, I'm married 38 years to the greatest hippie lacrosse chick of all time.
Right.
And, you know, she asked me last night, you know, she goes, man, what's with you? And I said, I was listening to this drill, and I'm, you know, I'm always melancholy when I get off the podcast because I keep thinking of all this stuff I should have been done for the last 40 years, and I'm, you know, now I'm hearing about it. I mean, where have I been? Are you still running that drill? And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Is there a way
you know,
to...
We'll do it... We'll do it both, you know, so there'll be three attack and three D on one cage, and then the middies are down at the other end on the cage. And, you know, basically it's working on your slide progression defensively or doubling the ball or whatever it is you want to do around the pipes, you know, with the attack and D, and then maybe a slide progression with the middies where, you know, you're starting them three on three, which is very realistic, obviously, but you want to get one-on-one work in. So you're just working on your pattern offensively. So let's say the creased midfielder is fading out the back, right? So you dodge an alley with the ball carrier. You have the follow guy up top. You throw to him. Now he's throwing the ball to that backside wing where the crease guy faded out to. And then that is the live one-on-one. And what it allows you to do is work on your ball handling, right? Throwing the passes that you need to that you're going to see in a game. And then it ends up with the one-on-one work that you want to get. And it's a pretty quick transition into that. You know, so
plus the defender is coming out with a guy. He's got to come out under control. In this case, you know, maybe you're
exactly.
coaching him to take away the high side. I mean, all those little nuances are much more realistic in terms of emulating what actually happens in a game.
Right, right. That's
you know,
we
offensively
try to,
and defensively. You know,
right,
versus guys that just put guys in four corners and go one on one.
Yeah, and there's some value to that. There's a compete level to that that I think is valuable. But I think if you can run your pattern, work on. You know, breaking down defensively, like you said, you're coming out at an angle that you're going to see on game day and in scrimmages, and that's a realistic one-on-one. So we'll do it both with the attack and D. And then what it allows you to do is then you can say, okay, now we're going live three-on-three, right? So you do that for 5-10 minutes of one-on-ones, and then you're going to live three-on-threes, and you're already set up the way you want to set it up, you know, so it works pretty well.
Oh, I didn't think about that part.
Yeah.
So I got two questions for you, man.
Sure.
Do we got a good Kerwick name for that drill?
The Leprechaun?
Is that what you call it?
No.
Oh, Kerwick. I'm sitting here taking notes feverishly trying to be like a professional interviewer, you know? I mean, I want to be Kirk Kucinich when I grow up.
That's what we call our one-on-ones. We just always typically try to start it, you know, with whatever set we run out of, right, as a midfield group or an attack group. If you're in a 2-2-2, you got one attackman inside, and you have two attackmen on the pipes. Maybe you drive a corner, slide, look to double on that corner, roll away, throw it one more, and then he's going one-on-one, right?
So, well, I got to tell you, though, man, compared to work your tail off and cheetah, that's pale by comparison in terms of nomenclature. You know, it's just it sucks, really. I mean,
you got to get me one, Mike. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, my gosh. Who was my last podcast? Oh, Scott Marr.
Yeah.
And, you know, the time before, you know, we were talking about how boring his names were, and which is generic. I mean, you're not alone. All the great coaches are boring in the names of their drills. And
right.
We're teasing, you know. And I actually sent him an email with a pretend resume, I think, on being hired as the drill name guy. I wanted to come up like twice a year on their nickel, right?
Right.
And just help them name drills.
That's great.
You know. Well, you may say it's great, but I have yet to receive an offer from you, and I never got an offer from him. So, I mean,
Keep checking your email, all right?
Every day, right? Every day.
Yeah, that's right. Check it.
You and I were talking about Red before.
Yeah. Yeah, Burnham. Red Burnham, one of the greats.
And I sent him a laxcoachmike.com. Well, actually, it's a long story, but I went down to watch them play Tampa.
Right.
And the post-grad team. And I took him down a laxcoachmike.com t-shirt. I shouldn't say that on the air. Now I'm going to get a bunch of calls. You know, I don't make t-shirts, but I had one made for him, a staff t-shirt for laxcoachmike.com, right?
Very nice.
And he promised me that he would send me an IMG shirt in return.
Right.
Right? Well, I mean, being a native, I mean, yeah, trade trinkets for blankets, right?
Right,
and,
right.
And that's what I was telling him. You know, this isn't your heritage. This is the way it works. And so a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, I don't get anything in the mail. So I kept taking pictures of empty lawn chairs by my mailbox every day.
Have you gotten it yet?
Oh, yeah, I got like three, man.
Nice.
Yeah, I shamed him into it.
Well,
I
had a good,
go ahead.
Good chance to watch his team play last week.
That's what he was telling me.
Yeah, I was able to go up to the game. They played at Albany, and I drove up to see a couple of young men play. And quite a high school team he has working down there. It's pretty impressive stuff.
Quite a high school player he has down there.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure. He's a difference maker.
You know, coaching summer travel ball, you know, against Red for years, we would always schedule each other because we're friends.
Right.
You know, I think I coached against, when he had that Road Warriors team that played at Dick's, I think, back to your Florida days, I think I coached against the Thompsons and Red when they were sophomores, juniors, or U-17 and U-19, you know?
Yeah,
so, yeah, I get that.
He'd bring like 13 guys with him to play four games in a day in the heat, and they were always tough as could be, even though they had like two subs on the sideline. So that is typical Red.
They like that color scheme of like purple and black. I could never understand that. Anyway, so this 3v3 to a 1v1, Coach.
Yep.
When I was looking at my notes this morning, I was racking my brain. How do you run that with your attack? You actually put a guy or two guys behind and run it, trying to emulate a defenseman sliding out behind, or do you pop a guy or fade a guy, depending on the terminology, back to that guy? How do you run that with your attack?
Yeah, it depends how you set it up. But, you know, I think if you have an attack on either corner, right, and then one attackman on the high crease, maybe you can do it with some pick play behind and then drive one of the corners, right, to jump on the island, and then slide from the crease guy. Don't allow him to feed that. Obviously, it's a simple little dump-in feed. It's not going to be there in a game.
Right.
And maybe have the crease guy fade out the backside. So on the double team, run away from it, throw it to the other attackman behind. He throws it one more. Now the defense is recovering off that double with communication. And again, you're coming out on the ball.
Interesting.
In a tough situation, right? But it's realistic.
Hey, this is a very atypical podcast, obviously, because it's more like a conversation that 2,000 people are going to listen in on in the next 48 hours.
Sure.
Hey, Matt, is it my imagination? I watch a ton of college lacrosse. I mean, I'm always watching the replays when I'm working out every day. And I'm blessed. I got a wife that loves lacrosse. So if the Penguins aren't on TV, or aren't playing that night, we do pay to get every Penguins game. But I'm seeing, is it just my imagination, or is everybody starting to sweep the attackman off the pass pick, pass down, pick down in an alley, bring that attackman all the way back up top? Are you seeing a lot of that? I don't ever remember seeing it as much as I've seen it this year.
Yeah, no question. It's a huge trend right now. I think, all the pick play on ball has become a part of everybody's offense.
These attackmen are actually sweeping across the top of the restraining line with the ball.
Yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on the defense. You look at some of the attackmen right now and how good they are and talented and big and fast and putting them at a full speed run coming across the top. And you get some good movement on the backside, it can really test your defense. Certainly we've seen it quite a bit. You see it a lot with Malloy Brown, and you see it at Virginia with that great attackman they have.
Well, you saw it with that freshman.
Yep. With
not the French. What's his name? I can't remember.
Krause. Yeah, Krause.
Krause.
Really
yeah.
Well, and Zed Williams on the other side does it really well, and. You'll see it with Ben Reeves at Yale every once in a while. They're a little more specific with what they do, but he's a big, fast, strong guy. So if you have that, type of personnel, I think it really can put a lot of pressure on the defense.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your opinion on that, man. Like I said, it seems like not every team, but almost every team is running variations of that now. I mean, everybody, it's amazing how the game has gone to the pass down, pick down initiation, a lot of times in 6v6. Or pass down, pick down, repick, all those kind of things.
Yeah, it's a big part of it.
But that attackman coming north, if you will, kind of like we used to do on some old man up plays. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
And then pop the guy out of the crease and then cut the guys down against the rotation and stuff. Interesting stuff. So practice ends up with the 10v10?
Typically, yeah. And then, if we need to do man up, man down at the end, we'll get into that. But we typically are going to end it with some kind of scrimmage. Next goal wins, usually, off of a face-off. Or, the other thing we've done quite a bit, and I know we talked a little bit earlier, and I do have to jump here. We got to go out to practice.
Yeah, I got to get you off.
But it's been great being on. The one thing that I've done this year, and I really liked it, one to add here is I call it clear 10. So we're in a scrimmage setup, but we will clear the ball from one end. Usually we get them in on offense, get them in on defense, then either roll the ball to the goalie or roll it off the end line or roll it to a defenseman. And we're going to clear to the other end to a clear possession 10 times in a row. And we'll put that on the scoreboard. So when you look up and you see that you've cleared 9 out of the 10, then you say, that's good. We want to be over 90%, certainly over 80% and are clear. But when you fail a couple early and all of a sudden you're 1 for 3 and it's up on the board and you still have, 7 more to go, you got to be clean on those. And I think it really emphasizes to the guys understanding that percentage of clear, how important it is. And then we'll do it the other way so the other team does 10 in a row. And we call it clear 10, just not a really good name again. Sorry, Mike, but, it's been really rough.
And for the high school coaches that are listening, I'm just thinking out loud here. If you don't have, if you're playing with a 26 or 27 man roster, again, you could run that to 5.
Easily,
and accomplish a lot of the things that you're accomplishing. For the listeners, edification.
Another SAT word. Nice
Thank
job.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure you're paying attention, man. For the other coaches' edification, obviously it's working, man. I'm looking at your clear percentage to date through this season at 918. That's the highest of any coach I've ever interviewed.
Yeah, we've been good at this year. I'm not really sure why. Maybe that's why, because we're doing a lot of it. We've been riding really well lately because we kind of had to because we're not facing off great. And, do some more 10-man. So that's been fun for the guys, and we've been spending more time on it in the scrimmage segment of practice.
No, man, I love it. I love it. Hey, I'm going to let you go. Before
Thanks
we
lot,
sign
man.
Off, you'll find the stuff on the site, the links to CornellCamp.com. They've actually done a nice job with that website, Matt, compared to a lot of the ones that I review and promote. There's a kind of a skills camp, and then a couple of recruiting camps, which we're huge proponents of on our site. I mean, I would almost rather see the kids not play summer travel ball and go to two or three recruiting camps and actually, you know, see what the coaches' personalities are like, see what the culture's like, and do all those kind of things. But you can get there by clicking. Hey, Coach, I'm going to let you go. Obviously, you know, I've been very blessed in my coaching career with awards and championships and all that kind of stuff. And you've had a gigantic influence on me personally as well as a coach, and I just want to say thanks for that. Continued success to you. This is Lax Coach Mike, radio voice back. Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. You got an unbelievable responsibility and opportunity influencing the lives of these young people. Take it very seriously every day. Go back and look at your practice plan. Make it better today, man. Coach Maddie, thank you so much. Stay in line with me for 1 second. Until next time, God bless everybody.